From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Actions were held in cities around the United States on Tuesday to oppose the slate of anti-abortion laws that Republicans are passing in state after state. Abortion rights activists sounded the alarm bells after Georgia's so-called fetal heartbeat ban passed. But it was when Alabama then passed a near total ban on abortion that anger around the nation has swelled even more. President Trump, perhaps realizing the continued popularity of abortion access among the public, distanced himself from the extremism of the pro-lifers, who don't want even women who have been raped to have control of their bodies. He said on Twitter, "I'm strongly pro-life, with the three exceptions, rape, incest, and protecting the life of the mother." But of course, it has been Trump who has created the biggest opening in decades for the anti-abortionists to try to overturn the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, granting women the constitutional right to have control of their own uteruses. My guest is Jody Jacobson. She's the president and editor-in-chief of Rewire.news. Welcome, Jody.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
So, of course, this issue is a deeply, deeply personal one for most women. This is about our bodies, the landscape, the political landscape that that's being discussed and torn apart is literally, you know, referring to parts of our anatomy and all of these various what if scenarios around how we women get pregnant, or people who are biologically identified as women get pregnant and decide how to remain pregnant or not to remain pregnant, etc. Do you feel that we have come now closer than we have in decades to the Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade being overturned?
Absolutely. We're absolutely closer. I mean, there's a number of reasons why. We have a, proto-fascist government in the Republican Party and in the administration currently in power. We have judges being selected for their adherence to certain ideological positions, including completely anti-choice positions. And they're really, we have to remember something, that this is about women's bodies, or those who are identified as women, their bodies, but it's about our lives. It's about our economic lives. It's about our social participation. It's about committing to another human being for your entire life. So beyond the uterus, so to speak, because we tend to talk about just the pregnancy. Obviously pregnancy is a critical part of this, because it's the process through which another human being comes into being. But it's also about the totality of our lives. So we can't think about this just as the 9-month period of a pregnancy and what happens therein, but what women are being forced to do and to commit to for their entire lives that men are never forced to do or to commit to, just by virtue of the fact that you have a uterus.
So we have the Alabama ban, but before that, I mentioned the Georgia ban and several other states in various stages of their bans. How does Alabama compare to the other bans? Georgia's ban is the so-called fetal heartbeat ban, which means that anything after 6 weeks of a pregnancy, abortion would be illegal. In Alabama, it basically, as I understand it, bans all abortions except in cases where the mother's life might be in danger, and it criminalizes specifically doctors who would perform abortion with sentences of up to 99 years in prisons. Does Alabama rate as the most extreme around the nation?
It's the most extreme in its literal interpretation, but I think we have to recognize a few things about this. One is that the far right is extremely effective in their communication strategy. So take the name of this, of the Georgia bill, for example, the so-called fetal heartbeat or heartbeat ban. There is no fetus at 6 weeks. What we are talking about is electrical activity in what is called the fetal pole. And that is literally a band of tissue that attaches the embryo and to the placenta and the uterus. There's no fetus there to have a heartbeat.
And generally, right, when women think they might be pregnant, when they do their ultrasound, it's that flicker of electricity that tells them there's a pregnancy, often for the very first time, and it can be basically confirmation of your urine test.
Exactly. So really what we call these are 6 week bands, because this heartbeat piece is just something that's a communication tool. And I think that what we have to remember is that all of these bands are draconian, because really, if you think about it, if you cannot provide abortions after 6 weeks, then you're effectively putting out of business every single economically viable clinic and every single doctor who's able to provide abortions in a surgical manner. You can have an earlier medication abortion and not have to do that in a clinic at all, and it's very safe, but the effect is to put providers out of business. There won't be any clinics available earlier than 6 weeks, because nobody knows they're pregnant before 6 weeks, and the whole rigmarole of getting a surgical abortion takes, you know, time to arrange. So these are, yes, the Alabama bill is in effect stricter on the law, and because it has greater penalties and increases the penalties for providers and women, but they all are in effect abortion bans that eliminate access to care. And there's really no real room there for abortion care to exist, even under a 6 week ban like in Georgia.
I'm glad that you explained that these other bans are essentially as draconian, because I don't think that's coming through very much. What do you make of Trump's attempt to suggest that he's not as extreme as some of these forces that have pushed for these bans? He basically says, I support abortion when we're talking about rape victims or victims of incest, or when the mother's life is in danger. The same thing that Ronald Reagan supported. And he's suggesting that there's some difference between him and the forces in Alabama and Georgia that banned abortions.
Well, let's just go from the principle that it's not what they say, it's what they do. And let's remember that Trump put in office someone at HHS who oversaw and forced young women who were immigrant asylum seekers who were pregnant not to get abortions because he felt he could override their own abortion decisions. And these were young girls that had been sexually assaulted. So if you don't mind a little bit of profanity, I call bullshit. The fact is that the reason that Trump, Kevin McCarthy, and others are so very upset about the lack of exceptions right now is because they know that in the minds of those people who consider themselves nominally pro-choice, this goes too far. And it's a political, you know, campaign season, and they don't want to be seen as extreme, but they don't care. They don't care about exceptions. You know, when you have these exceptions, in practice, they don't work anyway, because if you look closely at the law, for example, you can't get an abortion if you've been raped unless you've reported it to the police in a specific period of time. So many rape victims don't go to the police for the very reason that they are often not believed, or they've been assaulted by someone they know and they're afraid, or they're in a domestic partnership that is dangerous. It's really the details that make the exceptions real or not. And almost none of these bills actually provides for abortion care in those exceptions. Also, again, who will be available to provide this care if you drive abortion providers out of existence, and if you make them afraid to actually provide abortion care, even in technically legal circumstances? So again, I call bullshit, because when the rubber meets the road. They didn't care about the young women in detention who needed abortions, who had been sexually assaulted. Why would they start caring now?
And of course, didn't Trump, when he had the chance to, or when he took the chance to replace Supreme Court justices, pick from the list given to him by evangelical groups that want to end abortion access?
Yes. Yes. There's no question. There's no question. The only concern they have right now is for their political future. And again, those people who are supposedly out there who would be just in, you know, fine with a 6-week abortion ban, as long as there was some nominal exception there, they could make their conscience feel better about.
So there has been some speculation in the media about just how far these bans will go. In the New York Times, Professor Mary Ziegler, who's a law professor, wrote an op-ed saying abortion opponents think they're winning. Have they set themselves up to fail? And she and others have pointed out this idea of using fetal personhood as a hook towards overturning abortion is going to end up meaning that the abortion anti-abortionists are overplaying their hand, and that the Supreme Court, especially Justice John Roberts, who, you know, is not a progressive or a liberal, but who wants to preserve the idea of the court being nonpartisan, may stand against Brett Kavanaugh, may stand against Neil Gorsuch, and that this doesn't mean the end of Roe.
So the conventional thinking is, and I think it's true, that, as you said, Roberts doesn't want the court to be seen as political, and he's ostensibly got an eye toward what history will say about the court, assuming we have history to write at that time, what history will say about the court, you know, under his leadership. And it's very true that, you know, you hear people like Pat Robertson saying, oh my gosh, this has gone too far. It's not that it's gone too far for them. It's that they don't think it's the right case to take to the court for the very reason you note. I think, and many other legal scholars think, that Roberts would rather chip away at Roe slowly but surely, as has been done de facto at the state level by closing abortion clinics through various kinds of laws that have been put in place and making access to abortion, you know, increasingly scarce. Many people think that's what Roberts would rather do rather than overturning Roe outright, certainly not on a 6-week abortion ban or an 8-week abortion ban. So I think that, yes, they may have overstepped with regard to the court. It remains to be seen, but I think it's a plausible argument. I also think there's another issue, which goes back to the political issue we were talking about earlier. We are coming into a very fraught campaign. And
presidential when, electoral campaign.
Presidential campaign, Senate seats, House seats. When you sort of put before people the reality of the warning you've been giving them for over a decade and a half now, that Roe v. Wade is on the chopping block and that the right wants to overturn Roe v. Wade and criminalize pregnancy, which is, you know, they've always said, oh, we don't want to put, you know, women or doctors in jail. But they do, and they already are putting women in jail. Now you've awakened people to the fact that, oh, wow, this is really happening. And it does affect politics. It will affect the campaigns, and it will affect the way people are mobilized to come out to vote. So I think, again, the reason there some of the folks who are concerned about this are so concerned is because of the campaign and not because of the implications of the laws themselves.
So essentially, given how popular access to abortion remains around the country, they're worried about a backlash.
Absolutely, without question. Because we saw in 2018 in the elections that people really mobilized to come out and they turned the House over. And, you know, the Republicans are, I think, increasingly seen for what they are, which is, I will say it, they're fascists. And we have to recognize what's going on. The only reason they hold power to the extent that they do is because they deny people the right to vote. They go out of their way to gerrymander districts into ridiculous configurations and then deny people access to the ballot box. we would not have a Georgia abortion ban, but for voter suppression and the stealing of votes from Stacey Abrams in Georgia. That's just one example of how, if we aren't talking about voting rights, then we're not really protecting any of our rights. Certainly not abortion rights, but many others of our rights are completely at risk because of our lack of attention to voting rights.
And just to give our audience a sense of how many of these abortion bills are in play, either being debated or already having passed into law, we're talking about the states of South Carolina, Louisiana, Missouri, and of course, Georgia and Alabama, which we discussed, but also Ohio, Mississippi, Kentucky. And I'm looking at this great list on Rewire.news that your reporters have put together. So it's a number of states, and they've taken a very systematic state-by-state approach that, you know, you gotta, I suppose, admire for their doggedness at how they've approached this issue. If anything, I suppose the progressives can learn from how these anti-abortionists have taken, you know, what a very, very vocal minority wants to see in this country and made it, you know, this close to becoming reality.
Yes, this is an issue of two things. It's an issue, one, of white supremacy and demographic trends, which worry white supremacists. Mm. Then also control over women, which the two tie together, obviously, because if you control reproduction, you control patriarchy and you control white supremacy. Any nation state that is in fear of its demographic destiny, as many are, or see demography as destiny, tends to try to control reproduction in one direction or the other in order to achieve national goals. And, you know, we can't have an evolving society in which the rights of anyone, gender, irrespective of gender, color, ethnicity, race, are actually respected if people don't have control over their fertility. And so this is where the nexus comes in of controlling people and controlling power. And I really think that when you look at those states, those are all states that have are either very, you know, high density of white population or high density of population that is suppressed from voting. And you can really see a pattern in those states.
So just picking up on what you just said, you're suggesting that some of these white supremacist forces that support Trump are worried about the complexion of the nation changing because of ongoing immigration, but also birth rates, higher birth rates among immigrant families that are already settled in the U.S., and that abortion bans are a way to keep the demographics more steady?
Yes, because, see, this is not with only, you know, beginning with Trump. This is something that goes back several decades where the conservative movement saw its future in assuring a majority white population and a majority of power among states that were controlled by white men. And so they've always been concerned about these issues. And if you go back to the issues that I worked on for much of my career, which were issues of population control and reproductive freedom and the U.S. role in controlling population in other countries, you can see how demography is part of this whole panic about whether X or Y populations are too large, growing too quickly, not growing quickly enough. And right now there's a panic among many of the far right because U.S. fertility rates have been declining. So they have a panic about the size of the U.S. population writ large. They have a panic about the color of the U.S. population writ large. And of course, you can see that as instituted in immigration rates and as being said baldly by Trump, the things that people have never said in the open before, like this country's closed to immigrants, for the very reasons that white supremacy is now open. It's out in the open. But this is not a new thing. It's just the way they have controlled the debate about abortion care is to talk about babies, but they're not really very concerned about babies when they, you know, a place like Alabama has one of the highest infant mortality rates in the country. So it's not about the babies. It is about controlling population growth.
And I'm so glad you brought that up. The hypocrisy is quite stunning. Alabama was also the state that has very recently been in the crosshairs of the Justice Department for the most horrendous prisoner abuses that state is facing. I mean, this is not a state that seems to have much respect for the sanctity of actual life, you know, instead of the cell collections that they seem so ardently excited about saving.
Yeah, no, this is not a country that has real worry about the sanctity of life. I mean, let's face it, you know, we just heard today, I think it was, that that there were people being put in solitary confinement, immigrant asylum seekers, because they were LGBTQ or they had mental illness or they were disabled or persons with disabilities. I mean, these are fundamental cruelties of actual people living and here with us who are experiencing deprivation, cruelty every day of every week. And yet, you know, the anti-choice, pro-forced birth movement gets to cloak itself in something called pro-life, which it decidedly is not. Because if you measure up the policies that they promote, the things they are against, like access to healthcare, access to preventive care, now many of them are talking about we don't need vaccines. I mean, it's just, it's gotten to the point of absurdity. It's a combination of purposeful ignorance and also ideology gone amok.
So there was also another bill that Rewire.News has discussed on its website about the anti-abortion bill in Texas that is basically making the case for banning abortions over fetal abnormalities, and they're claiming that it's because they care about disabled children. So there are these multiplicity of approaches that the anti-abortionists are taking, and we haven't heard much about this Texas law.
Yeah, and check out Texas for how much funding they give to people who are dealing with children with disabilities, and you'll know how much they care about children with disabilities, which is to say, not at all. Again, if you look at what happens after that baby is born, that child does not have social supports for a healthy, productive, healthy, in every way, life. There is no social supports for that child. So it's really a program simply of forced birth and forced gestation, and not of a pro-life ethic that really says, we want the people in this country who are born to have the best possible social supports to be able to attain their own goals and, you know, and to achieve what they want to achieve, whether it be education, whether it be nutrition in childhood, whether it be assistance to parents who are struggling. None of that exists, especially in the states that are banning abortion.
One of the other aspects of the abortion story, which I think may need some clarifying, is there's the sense that it's mostly Republican white men who are passing these bills. There was a photo that went around about the 25 white men who passed the Alabama bill, but it was signed into law by a white woman, by Governor Kay Ivey. This isn't just men, although I believe it seems as though there are more men than women, which one would, you know, imagine should be the other way around if we're talking about something that controls women's bodies. But this is something that men and women who identify as Christian fundamentalists, perhaps, seem to be pushing. Or am I wrong?
Absolutely. No, you are totally right. In fact, the author, and I say author in quotations because oftentimes bills that come up in legislatures are written elsewhere, but then given to legislators to introduce. But the author and sponsor in the Senate in Alabama of the bill that passed is a woman. And there were several women in the Alabama House that also were supportive of this bill. So we have to recognize that, yeah, it is about white male supremacy and patriarchy, but women who are part of that system are as complicit as the men in that system, in part because they benefit from it, and in part because they don't have any other system of support. So yes, they are part of it. They are enforcers. It really truly is like The Handmaid's Tale, which is increasingly our daily lives, where women are some of the worst perpetrators of assaults on women when you think of legal assaults on women.
Do you feel finally that the stop abortion bans taking place that took place Tuesday will make an impact, or are you hopeful that there's enough pushback from the rest of America?
So I think what's happening now, I think last I heard, and I don't know what happened at the end of the day, but I know from NARAL, Pro-Choice America, for example, that they were at one point up to 512 different Wow. protests throughout the country, probably more by the end of the day on Tuesday. But the point being that, yes, as I said earlier, I think these bans are mobilizing people who are realizing, yes, the worst is coming to pass. But again, I don't think if we are not as focused on voting rights and securing the election apparatus in every state that we will be able to secure any other rights in this country, particularly not after what's been happening in terms of the packing of the courts with far right wing judges, so to speak, some of whom, are barely, if at all, passable in a legal sense. So I think that today, that if we're not talking about voting rights, we're not securing our own rights for anybody.
Well, Jody, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I imagine rewire.news is the best place you would recommend for people to find out more.
I would. Thank you.
My guest
I would recommend rewire.news.
Wonderful. We'll link to that from our website as well. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you. Bye.
My guest has been Jody Jacobson, President and Editor-in-Chief of Rewire.news. We've been discussing the various abortion bans around the nation. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.